No, please open that door before we all suffer. Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I don't know if it will be possible for us to actually make sure that the projection is slightly more visible than what we have right now. The starting point here must be that matters flowing from the project is now a subject of court proceedings. And therefore, in some way where we perceive that matters might be sub judice, we might be severely restricted in what we are saying and what we are able to respond to. However, part of our responsibility as the Department of Housing is to account to the Portfolio Committee, and we thought that we should do so at this point to explain to them where we are as the government, to explain our actions at the present. Could you make it bigger than that? The project has been running for almost 3 years now. On a regular basis, we brief MINMAC. Every time we have a MINMAC meeting, we brief MINMAC because, as you know, this is a project that is jointly owned by all 9 provinces, run by national government, the provincial government, and Kibedisha on behalf of all the provinces. We regularly brief the Portfolio Committee. I think the last briefing we made was this year in February to the Portfolio Committee on a number of issues that came up, and the Portfolio Committee was keen to understand what was happening. And also on a regular basis, when the Portfolio Committee does call some of our parastatal matters relating to the entry are very high on the agenda, because this has received quite a deal of prominence in the media and in the minds of our people around the Western Cape, for one reason or another. We also keep cabinet briefed on a regular basis, because the project had to be approved by cabinet, because we were requesting permission from cabinet to go outside of the parameters of the policy so that we can test the new policy that we have. So on a regular basis, we go to cabinet and we brief them. And on a regular basis, we also take our cue from cabinet on what direction we are taking, or what direction should be taken, or whether the direction we are taking is in line with what we perceive is the correct line. Happily for us, Chairperson, we have had quite a lot of consultation with the Portfolio Committee, so most of what we will be saying now will not be new to the portfolio policy. However, we'll run you through the main points here to recap. To recap what it is that we're talking about, so that at no point are we at a loss. There has been a great deal of media interest in this, with a number of later interested parties in the issue of poverty and informal settlements. The same people whom I would have wanted to assist us when we had fires on the N2 have suddenly come up now very keen on the plight of the poor on the N2. But it's glad to have so many people on board, because I'm sure that there will be of assistance to us as we move forward. We need as many people interested in supporting the poor as partners to government. But most of the people who have written to the media or have commented on this have quite clearly come in at the last end and kicked on those issues that they would like to raise, completely out of context with what we are doing. And it would have been good to have had them on board right from the beginning. I want to remind you, members, that we had agreed that the housing plan aims to embrace a new vision of government for the next 5 years. This is what we took to Cabinet in 2004, September, and we asked Cabinet to allow us to have a new plan that would allow the Ministry the responsibility beyond what we had in the past of dealing with low-cost housing. Our mandate is now expanded beyond low-cost housing to deal with the entire spectrum of the property market. We also got permission from Cabinet that the new approach would be to ensure that the duality of the housing market is stopped, where we have a booming first economy and a very stagnant second economy. And unfortunately for us, we have also got ourselves stuck into the second economy as we build houses very far from any kind of normal development. We got the permission to move away from that. The key focus of the plan would be to promote the achievement of a non-racial integrated society. I'd like you to underline that. A non-racial and an integrated society. This was the thrust of the new plan. Thus, sustainable settlements are defined as, I want to underline this as well, well-managed living areas in which the economic growth and the social development are in balance with the carrying capacity of the natural system. Which means, instead of having what we used to have, a top-heavy development where the infrastructure cannot support what is built on top of it, causing the kind of stress on the infrastructure that we've had in most of the areas that we built, where the sewers burst, all of these things, because the carrying capacity, which is the infrastructure, has to be in sync with what we have above. This is one of the main problems that we experienced when we were looking back on the last 10 years to find that, in fact, the intensity and the density that we created around townships have been such that we have not taken into consideration the carrying capacity, and we needed to ensure for sustainability there's got to be a synchronization of the two. And we had to ensure also that there is integration which promotes sustainable development. We had to make sure that the issue of wealth creation is also taken on board, because what we are giving is an asset, because this is part of our intervention into poverty alleviation and equity as well. The new approach is based on the provision of shelter within the context of well-service integrated settlements that are well located and enjoy secure environments and are in accordance with the plan, and that will have a greater participation in the delivery by the private sector. This is a very important introduction into what we're doing now. We wanted to ensure that we can bring the private sector on board, because what we're dealing with now is no longer low-income housing, but the entire spectrum, and making sure that we have as much integration as is possible. So we had to bring in the private sector, and a greater extension in this way also to of social amenities and other amenities which helps the creation of a healthy community. Could you skip a thing that is done in place? That comes at the end. Could you please skip? We went to cabinet and asked cabinet to approve the plan that we were proposing to cabinet. Sorry, I think I just want to take you back. Before we took this matter to cabinet on the 11th of August 2004, together with the three stakeholders, which is the city, then run by the ANC government, the province and ourselves, called a government in liaison to sell to them the idea of the new BMG concept. We wanted them to buy into this because we had also tentatively wanted to ensure that if we have the pilot project in the Western Cape, the people of the Western Cape would understand and would be part and parcel of what we were doing. We had the government in diesel there, and we had an extremely successful government in diesel. It took the better part of 5 hours, and we explained to them that we are going to be testing the new approach on the N2. At that time, it hadn't become a national project. It was a provincial and city project. We're going to be testing the pilot project on the N2 residents. And we had a difficult time because at that time, then the people of Langa were up in arms because they didn't understand why we would have chosen an informal settlement of people who had just come into the city as a testing ground for a new approach. So a great deal of our efforts right at the beginning in dealing with our communities was also to ensure that those people who were very unhappy about what we were proposing were taken on board, as well as making sure that the residents of Joe Slovo themselves understood what it was that we were bringing onto them, because apart from the advantages, the huge advantages that they would get from jumping the queue and being beneficiaries of this new approach, we also accepted their cooperation. We needed their cooperation because at the same time there's a great deal of inconvenience in anything that is being done to improve any situation. So we needed to sit down with them and ensure that they have a greater intake on this. There is the rationale behind the N2 gateway program that I don't need to go into, because I am certain that this is you are very conversant with this. We're going to have a problem here. Now, we came to the portfolio committee, very soon after we got permission from cabinet to adopt the N2 gateway program. And this was the first meeting, I think it was in November 2004, after we got the approval from cabinet. I remember very well, it was at the room down in the old Marx building there, and we gave you the presentation still fresh from the press, because we wanted a buy-in also from the portfolio committee, because what we had got from cabinet was a very broad in principle agreement, because this was going to be a pilot project testing a new policy. And the understanding also was that we would be able to tweak and put together the policy in better refinement as we piloted it through the N2. So we brought this, and what I'm bringing to you, please go on, is what we brought to you. This is Gotha's quarry. This is part of the extent of the N2. Please continue. This is Barcelona. This is also part of the N2. This is the approach from the airport, and with those stagnant waters there, we explained to you at that particular time that on a regular basis that water collects in that area. In fact, if we had it our way, we would have turned that into some kind of pond, but we have very scarce resources around land, so we were considering turning that into some kind of urban farm. We have new rest there, we have Bunga, and we have across there some institutional and non-governmental organizations that occupy that space. We have Joe Slovo there, we have the power station and the affluent complex. Please go on. Is there no other color we can use? The reason why I am bringing this to you is to remind you of the ground that we have trod together, and so that even as we go backwards and forwards, you understand what it was that we were dealing with. But the point that I wanted to raise with you is a matter that is the best we can do. What we had explained to you then, I think we gave you, do you have any more pictures? We gave you a view of what we wanted to do. We had the vision of Kanana there, and you remember Kanana is the one where we have that water there. So we're going to build a little pond there. We're very futuristic in our approach, and have those would have been the gardens, because some of the land is not good for human settlement. The reason I'm bringing this back to you is because I wanted to explain to you again what we explained to you then, which might not have made sense, that a great deal of the land that is used for informal settlement is indeed not suitable for human habitation. This one was one of them. Go back a bit. We would still need to ensure that the people of Kanana know that very much as they may love the land there, some of it might not be habitable. And this is what we have for the future of that area, urban gardening and turning that into a pond. And you can imagine in the present environment, if we were to say to the people there that we might move you so that we have a pond there, the sky would fall. But if they understand that this is a health hazard and a continuous one on a regular basis. We have then the next one, which is a vision of New Rest. We explained to you then that, in fact, New Rest is the only one out of all of these that would be an in-situ upgrade of this, because the area and the markings and the land allocation makes it possible for us to have in-situ. And we chose New Rest because it would be a pilot for in-situ upgrading. I need to repeat that. We explained to you, got you accepting, that out of the N2, the only in-situ upgrading because of the soil conditions was New Rest. Everything else we would need to negotiate with the people to move so that we can actually deal with the soil conditions, because by their very nature, informal settlements are areas that have been left because they are not the choiciest areas. People come in, find these areas, not understanding that the geotechnics that are attached to it will live on those areas. We've also explained to you and got permission from you, because it is in the budget, to get some money from yourself to ensure that we can rehabilitate the land on which we will put the entries, That was our futuristic outlook for N2. And this is what we are still trying to stick to the extent that it is possible for us to cut the cost down. Again, I'm going through this so that you can understand and remember what it is that we had agreed on and which we had brought to you. Because between the agreement and now, the actual visualization and actualization of what we're doing is a period of about 1.5 years. Please continue. That is the greater extent of the N2 gateway project, and that is what we have. I want to bring you to the present. Now, this is an aerial view of the totality of what we're dealing with in Joe Slovo. Before we started out, we contracted a number of students, I think, from UCT to do a survey. This time it was the city's responsibility, long before my time, because the project itself, I think, was conceptualized in 2003. By the time that the national government was brought on board in 2004, most of the groundwork had already been done. At this particular time, the number of people that we had living there, number of families, was 1,732 families living in Joe Slovo. These were recorded, these were put on the waiting list, and these are the people who, at that particular time, were the beneficiaries of this particular project. We are now in court before we go.
No.
We are now in court, and the lawyers of the people of those people say they are representing 6,000 people, 6,000 families. So I want you to understand that between the conceptualization and the now, a great deal of people have taken opportunity of seeing that there is activity in the area of making sure that they can also get onto the bandwagon, and more of that later. Please go on. This is an aerial view of the N2, the Joslovo corridor. What I wanted to bring to your attention here is that on the left-hand side, in the background there, is an area which is called Settler. And when we took on the responsibility, the new responsibility as the Department of Housing and the Ministry, of integrating the first and second economy, one of the things we wanted to do is to ensure that we can actually unleash the potential of some of these areas, such as Settlers, where people, black people, had invested a great deal of money and their investment had gone down because the banks had moved out and they decided to redline those areas. So we're hoping that one of the spin-offs would be in that area to raise the value of the property that is invested in there by those people who were assisted by a bank, and now we're in great distress because the value that they invested in could not be realized. On the right-hand side is a normal vision you would have seen as you were driving to the airport on a regular basis, and you would see too that at the foreground there, just after the road, was a canal that overflowed every time it rained, a canal into which most of those houses frequently fell and had to be rescued from the water that raced past there, untreated water, because at that time we had not begun to pay any attention to issues like this. Please continue. This is Joslovo before we came in. This is just to show you, lest you forget, because the human mind does have that particular tendency to forget what is not in front of it on a regular basis. This is what we have. This is what we have to deal with. That man coming home from work, that is his route to work on a daily basis. On a good day, he'll be able to step on the stones to go home. On a bad day, when it has flooded, he had a big problem. That is a big man. I want you to imagine what has happened to children who took the same route to school. As you know, there were fires in Joslovo every year. There would be one or two fires set off by some accidental burning of candle burning to the ground, or some paraffin stove falling over. There's a great deal of urban legend in Langa that the people of Joslovo deliberately set their houses on fire to get attention. But that's just urban legend. The real story behind it is that people did get hurt. Children did get hurt. It was a disaster. On a regular basis, especially this part, the first part of this road, on a regular basis, members of parliament would come together. Members of parliament would come together and make donations to the people of Langa because there would have been a fire. I don't remember a single member of parliament coming to me to say, Minister, there hasn't been a fire, there has not been any donation, because otherwise I would direct you to places we still have fires. But we've now removed the source of fire, because the greatest congestion was on phase one. That is where we invariably had fires. This is the first fire that we had. Now, this happened in 2005, I think around February. As we were preparing to implement the plan. So the fire came right at what is called a crossfire, right across what we had planned as a process of unfolding the development here. So we suddenly found ourselves, even as we were beginning to put together this plan, having to deal with the victims of the Joslovo fire. What we did was to erect some tents there. I think most of you will remember we had about 5,000 people living there in those tents. We had a great deal of unhappiness there because there was no privacy there. There was no time frame. There was just absolute despair. One of the things we tried to do was to get emergency and immediate housing for those people from Seth Bona, which is a hospital. You're well aware that we had, especially members of the media here, we had a great deal of resistance from the people of Port Macquarie who didn't want the people from Langa. So that could not have been a long-term arrangement for us. I think we went to some other derelict hospital somewhere else, and again the people in the neighborhood just were not having any of that. This particular time, the only land we had available that belonged to us, that would accommodate the number of people that we were dealing with, was in a place called Just and Tristan. That was already part and parcel of the Joe Slovo extension. So that is where we had intended to ensure that we can build what we now call the TRA villages, the temporary shelter villages, to ensure that we can house the number of families that we will be removing from here. But I just wanted to ensure that you do remember also that there was a bit of urgency around this particular time because we had to deal with the unfortunate situation that occurred at this particular time. This is the land that we then acquired and prepared, and as I indicated, this is the only land that we could find which belonged to us, and at the particular short notice that we had to prepare and put the number of people that that we needed to put there. I want to say, Chairperson, that a number of questions have come to me to say, but the government has a great deal of land. Why was that land not utilized? Right now we are in discussions with the Department of Public Enterprise about some of the land that belongs to Transnet. It has taken us over 2 years to get that land. It is not as smooth as it looks, because that land sits on the books of those departments, and for it to shift from one book to another, there's got to be an exchange and an agreement. And it has taken us that long. It would have taken us that long, therefore, to be able to move people from the tent to that land if we were still going the route of looking for any other land. This is the only land we had, and it was the land that we were already anyway allocated for the building of the piece of the houses that we were going to make available. This is what we have now. These are the TRAs 1, 2, and 3 from an aerial view. This is a temporary shelter. And this also is in line with the policy that was adopted by Cabinet of temporary shelter for emergency situations. This is the route we're going to go until we have no informal settlement, where we find people living in situations of complete stress and the land cannot carry them for whatever reason. We would like to make sure that we can provide some temporary villages for them and ensure that they are living in conditions that are much better than where they are now. We are in the process and dealt, as you see, of improving these conditions to make them much, much better than the conditions you find in informal settlements. This is phase one, if you remember, with Inga Store in the background there, and the untreated water in the canal that had not been built up then, as we were preparing to put up phase one. This is Joe Slovo phase one before 2005, before 2004. This is now Joe Slovo phase one after we've completed it. I want you to keep this in your mind at all times, members of the committee. The before, please go on. Okay, before, go back to the before. The before, and the before, and the after. Because what we are trying to do at all times is to say to our people, what we are providing you is of the standards that we have promised you, to ensure that we can give a decent house to everybody. There will be inconveniences, there will be time, but the end product, I am certain, will have been well worth waiting for. We have here, there is continued talking, the kind of environment that we want to see in the BNG, an environment where children can play, where there is security, where there is a possibility, finally, that any of those people who might buy into that scheme or own any of the houses or the units that we are preparing for them will find value and this will be an asset. And I'd like that person to you at all times to bear in mind the before and the after, the conditions that we have taken our people from to put them in. It's been a long, long road. But the vision, hopefully in the end, will bear out all the problems and the trauma that both ourselves as government, the portfolio committee, whom I come to on a regular basis with this, and the people of Joe Slovo will have had to go through. What we had also agreed, between the chairperson and myself, they decided perhaps I talk too much. Anyway, let me zero in on these issues. The land parcels that we then had to buy to ensure that when we decamp, because the number of people we have in any of the areas that we have will not be accommodated in the areas where we live. We've therefore been buying land, and some of the land that we have been trying to purchase, we've had serious problems with. One of them, in fact, belongs to the project, was Epping. We had a serious problem with the industrialists in Epping who wanted to take us to court. They were not going to have anybody, any of the people who wanted to decamp, to live in that area. We're trying to procure through our relationship with the Shack Dwellers International land that might be available to them in a place called Philippi. I believe that we are promised the same land between the city and ourselves by the Minister of Defense. I was saying to him this morning that it is such a typical male son to promise two women the same thing and make each one of them believe that they have a prior claim to that same land. But yeah, he's listened to both of us promising us the same land. But what I'm trying to explain to you is we had to get more land to ensure that we can remove the people that we have and give a greater opportunity to them. Part of the underlying principle that we have in the bringing of embracing new ground is not only giving people an opportunity of the choice of the house that they might have, also the typology, and having a choice of where they might want to live ultimately. By the time that we have got all the processes in place, we are hoping to build in Windsor, we are hoping to build in Philippi, we are also hoping to acquire some land from Denver, which is next to the airport. We have on board the Department of Public Works, which is helping us look for land so that we can buy into that land and ensure that we can give the people of the entire integrated program the opportunity of choosing where ultimately they might want to settle. Because the bottom line is, when we are upgrading informal settlements, it is understood, it will not be possible to accommodate all of those people in the same place. One, because the land might not necessarily be suitable. Two, because the densities when you're dealing with informal settlements are so great. Where we have a in situ, which is what I was hoping we'd get onto here, is in Newrest. Newrest is another phase four of what we're dealing with now, and we have the kind of in situ houses that that the people of But I want us now to go on to the conditions of the temporary shelter, because this is what I want now to take you to the conditions of the temporary shelter. When government agreed that we should go the way that we are going now, which is breaking new ground, government had insisted that we should have an interministerial committee so that all ministers who are affected in one way or the other would be required to lend a hand and ensure that we can have the kind of system that speaks to each other. Thank you. We had an interministerial committee meeting out in February 2005. We invited the portfolio committee to go and show them the conditions that we had in the inter-site TRAs. We also took the opportunity to take the portfolio committee to the TRAs that had already been built in Delft. The reason why we did this and invited the portfolio committee was to show you what it was that we were putting in place. Because what we are also wanting to do is to ensure that as we develop policy in all those areas that will be affected in our work in building houses. That in fact, wherever a province comes across a situation where they have to temporarily relocate people, they would be required to follow certain steps, which is what we have done. One, they would need to make sure that they provide temporary shelter. Two, they would need to make sure that the temporary shelter that they are providing is marginally better than the conditions in the informal settlement. Three, they would need to make sure that to the extent that it is possible, the time spent in the temporary shelter will be limited. There would be time frames that would be required to be put there. We would need to ensure, too, that the lives of those people suffer as little disruption as is possible. So we took the portfolio committee to temporary shelter there to show them what it was that we were doing there and to take them on board about the difficulties that we are experiencing. We have two or three sites of temporary shelter. The first one is a site called Intersite, which housed then the most immediate and most vulnerable victims of the fire that we experienced in Joslovo. Then we have the massive infrastructure that we have in Delft. What we have put out to ensure that in fact we comply with our own requirements is we have a bus service that takes the children from Delft on a regular basis. I think it's two bus services that take the children from Delft to school because their schools are still in Langa. Number two, we have provided a mobile clinic to the people of Delft to ensure that they're not too dislocated from basic services that are required to be part. Yeah, just hold on there. Please, can you hold on there for a while? Hold on. Which part of hold on don't you understand? Don't you know what hold on means?
It flies and it goes.
Okay. What we have also provided is that we have arranged with the clinics in Langa to transfer the files of some of the patients that would then be needing assistance out in Delft. We have arranged together with the Department of Social Welfare to provide pension pay points. We've actually to make it slightly more attractive than where we were. We've done all of these things in a way that was is an improvement for where they were. In Langa they would have had one pay point. I think now we have about four or five. We now have five pay points that are available twice a week. We've also provided transport for people who might want to work in the city or who are looking for work in the city and live in Delft, because we are aware that distance is a problem in the dislocation of the city. The quality of the housing that is provided for them is temporary but 100% better than the conditions that they live. We took the portfolio committee there, they can attest to it. And generally we are trying to make sure that to the extent that it is possible, we have to make the temporary areas much, much better than the conditions in informal settlements. Number one, because we have to persuade people to move there, so we're going to have a kind of carrot that they can look forward to and make sure that they are better amenable to the idea of moving. So the conditions that we put out there, we are recording and we are making sure that this is part and parcel of the policy that we are going to be requiring. Should any province be required to move people for any length of time, these are the steps that we will be requiring from each one of them. So to all intents and purposes, here, with all the problems that we are experiencing, every step that we have experienced on the N2 has been a learning experience. One that is a very useful learning experience because we are able to document this and we are able to ensure that we provide policy for those areas. There will not be any situation anywhere in the country that will experience anything we have not experienced on the entry. I can assure you. And there will be policy to deal with that. And it will mean that we have a much greater uptake of the new policy. It will mean that we have we're much better prepared with all the provinces to ensure that we can deal with any eventuality that might come our way. Because this is a testing ground, it will experience all the hardships of any shift from one area to another in terms of the shift in the mindset and also the shift in the way that we are going to be doing things. I want to give you now that which Chauke was not able to stop, just a brief overview of what it is that we are that we have done, that we are trying to do, and then get back to the issue of the case itself.
What is this gentleman, Chauke? Okay. Don't worry about the volume, just do this.
We decided we're going to give you this video as a better alternative to taking you on a site visit to Jeddah. Yeah. But what we would like to do is for the portfolio committee on its own, with its oversight responsibility, to take some time to go to Jeddah to actually see the conditions that we are providing with. The conditions are much, much better than what we had in informal settlement. And we want to emphasize that. We did have a problem with the issue of electricity, but we've been able to resolve that now. This is part of Delft. This is part of Joe Slovo, what we had before we moved the people. This is Joe Slovo. This is the time of the fire, the visual encapsulation of what people went through on a regular basis. That's about this time of year. This is the density that we were dealing with. These are the living conditions inside Joe Slovo at any given time when it rains. And that's where our children play and live. We had the fire. And we removed people from that area as we were preparing it for phase one and two. And this is a temporary shelter that we have provided. Yes, we had to take the chickens as well because we promised the people that we would ensure that we disrupt their lives as little as possible. Now, the useful thing also for us in this is that each TRA is marked. And that is the number that will also correspond to the house that will be built for that particular phase. It also helps us keep ensuring that we are keeping a check on the waiting list. This is now the temporary shelter in Delft. The sun does not rise any later or earlier, but the conditions are much better. These are the school children that we transport from Delft to their schools. They go and wait for the bus at the nearest bus stop. And we transport them free of charge to their schools and back in the afternoon. These are the adults in the background there, that's a temporary shelter. These are the adults that we transport into the city, who may be working in the city or who may be looking for employment opportunities. the temporary shelter that we are providing, and by any measure, is a far cry from what we had. And there will be no fire there for the foreseeable future. Chairperson, the issues that we are faced with now are the issues which came to our attention very sharply when the people of Joslovo first marched. We're talking about the residents of Joslovo marched onto Parliament and gave me a letter. This would have been around when was the date of the month? And they gave us a letter which actually was at odds with the with the whole spectre of the march itself, because there were placards there that were denouncing members of parliament who were taking money from the people. But the letter itself seems to me a very, very reasonable letter. The letter indicated to me that the people of Joslovo were unhappy with the idea that they would have to share their space with the people who would be living on phase 2. You all know that phase 2 is the area which we had a sod turning event there with FNB, because integration and integrated human settlements means that we are offering not only low-income cost housing, we are also offering rental possibilities, we are also offering mortgage houses, because we are wanting to make sure that we can offer all these typologies. We've also made sure that we do an assessment of the area, because this is an area that consists of 30% of backyarders and 70% of people in informal settlements, and decided to do an assessment and enumeration of the affordability bracket within this area. So the ratios that we have broken down, the rental in relation to the freestanding housing, in relation to the mortgage housing, relates to the information that came out of that survey. The people of Joslovo decided that they were unhappy with the houses that were going to be built next to them, because, as they say, we demand RDP houses from our government to replace unhealthy living conditions. Yes, the conditions in Joslovo are extremely unhealthy. In fact, we have discovered that Cape Town has the highest incidence of TB in the world. Cape Town.
No.
And when you, and it was largely because of the conditions in the informal sector. If you go back to those slides and see the waterlogged conditions there, then you understand why it is possible. At a time when we have strains of TB that are at variance with anything that we've experienced, that are resistant to drugs, we need to be very concerned about that. We want government to refrain from selling land. So quite clearly, the people of Joslovo had either not been communicated to properly or had misunderstood the fact that there would be mortgage houses next to them. We had a march to the housing department on the 21st of September 2006 demanding RDC houses and the stepping down of the councillor. But this has not been considered. Development plans were made without involving the beneficiaries of the land. There is a far above the ground communication breakdown between the councillor and the residents. And they go on and indicate that they would like, we are against development. As interpreted by others, we just need to be located closer to urban areas. We demand development in Joslovo. It's exactly what the government is intending to do as well. And government should stop prioritizing money, should stop selling land, and government should prioritize RTC houses. The flood affecting our fellows and brothers over the weekend, we requested the disaster management department to come and help us, the councillor to assist us. Nobody showed up, and the councillor didn't want to have anything to do with us. And in fact, what you are doing is chasing us away and sending us to jail. We don't want to move from shack to shack. We want to move from shack to our own houses. We also demand a road maintenance in Joslovo. We also want to make sure that there are no potholes in those levels, because nobody is maintaining these areas. We want to make sure that the bucket system is eradicated in those levels, and a whole lot of other things that government had committed itself to in service delivery. I therefore phoned our, because I was not there to receive the memo, but it was faxed to me, I phoned our project manager to find out from them what level of negotiation and discussion we had with the people of Joe Slovo, because I get regular briefings from them that this is what they do on a weekly basis. And I was assured once again with a whole lot of reports that this was indeed going on, that the necessary explanations had been happening, that in fact the NEC from the province had had three meetings with the people of Joe Slovo to explain exactly why the need to have bonded houses, why the need to shift them to alternative arrangements as we build, because the soil conditions are not suitable right now for us to do anything else. In situ upgrading can only happen when the soil has been treated. In the case of Joe Slovo, this was a rubbish dump, and therefore we would need to ensure that we remove the topsoil, rehabilitate the soil, and make sure that we bring in fresh soil and compact it for it to be able to have sustainable and healthy growth for the community there. I was assured that this in fact had happened. I had a letter from the project manager detailing to me all the negotiations that had been going on, and he confirmed to me that negotiations were continuing with the community of Joe Slovo. I asked them if there was any pressure on the people of Joe Slovo to move, and he assured me that there was no pressure. At that time, we were asking the people of Joe Slovo to move as and when they were convinced that they were ready to move. There had been no pressure on them to move. 2 weeks thereafter, there was a protest that spanned the entirety of the M2. The police were called in, and there seems to have been a scuffle there, unfortunate incident, and also there seems to have been an incident of the phase two houses damaged, which the houses that belong to First National, which are in our care, were damaged because the residents took to the streets and got very heated under the collar, that the first thing they did was to ransack those houses and break them down. It became quite clear that the negotiations between ourselves and the residents had broken down. Irretrievably, there seemed to be entrenched positions. We indicated then that we would take all the necessary steps to ensure that there was no vandalism. Demonstration is a right that we all fought for in this country, those of us who did fight, to ensure that people who need to express themselves have the right to demonstrate. It is protected by the Constitution, it's protected by the laws of the country. But the one thing that we have said over and over again, from the president down to each minister, violence is not a necessary attendant to protest, should not be a necessary attendant. And where property is vandalized, it belongs to the state. We should not stand back and allow that, because it is sending a terrible message. For me, this was one of the darkest days of my calendar. The portfolio committee knows I spend every working day dealing with the entry, because this is a priority project, because this is where we are testing all the possibilities of the new policy. Every time we've had a problem, we've gone back to see if in fact we're doing it correctly, made sure that we are doing it correctly. I've taken the portfolio committee along with me, and I must take the opportunity again to thank them. At most of the community meetings that we've had, the portfolio committee has been there. First time we decided we're going to sell this concept to the people of Langa, the portfolio committee came along with me. We did door-to-door campaigns with the portfolio committee, explaining to the people of Langa, both the residents who were in the settled community and the informal settlement, what it is that we wanted to do. We gave them the plans. We invited them to our community meetings as we were conceptualizing this. We have community meetings on a regular basis. Once every month we have community meetings to explain where we are, why we have gone this direction, what problems we are experiencing, and together we craft a solution to how to go forward, because this is a pilot scheme. So when we had the front page, I didn't have the words. Extremely distressed. I've just been given another notification that on the 28th of November, M2 will be marching to FMB. We continued negotiating with the people of Joslovo. We continue explaining to them, and we continue engaging with the CDWs. The provincial department had employed CDWs to deal with the explanation of the project. They are still out there. We took on the services of an audit company, which did 5 or 6 public workshops with the community there, explaining to them what the process is, how to register for a house, how many people would be accommodated, and therefore giving them the possibility of a choice of 1, 2, 3. We have all that information of the choices that the people of Joslovo have made in relation to that. The communication and the negotiations with the people of Joslovo has been extensive, extremely extensive. The councillor who lives in Joslovo has been in extensive discussions with the people of Joslovo. Now, in terms of our of the way that we in the Department of Housing do things, the developer who is appointed has the responsibility of relocating should the relocation be required. The developer has given us his affidavit indicating how many times he went to each and every family in Joslovo to explain to them what the plan was and to get their feedback from them. This has been countersigned by his lawyer and everybody else. Tubelisa has explained to me with the whole pile of reports the length they have gone to explain, negotiate, discuss with the people of Joslovo. The portfolio committee has been there to explain, discuss with the people of Joslovo. I have personally been there numerous times to explain, discuss with the people of Joslovo. I wish I could have given as much time to other provinces. And I have said to the chairperson here, who is a resident of the Western Cape, I sometimes wish that the pilot project had been placed anywhere else. In any other province, it would have been a roaring success. It was mired down in politics that are either than the politics of development in the Western Cape. It is an unfortunate situation, but I suppose when you test something, you would have to test it at the deepest end to be able to understand what its strengths are when in fact the tide is much lower. For us at the Department of Housing, this has been a grueling experience. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you, and thanks for giving us such a comprehensive report on N2 Gateway. And members, this opportunity for you to engage with the presentation and focusing on those areas that you think need to stay. Thank you for coming back to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Just looking at the questions that I've written, the minister has actually answered some of the issues she raised along. Let's start with the last one first.
Sure.
You indicated, and from what you said, obviously your department and everybody else has been always great length to communicate with the beneficiaries, in fact. Seems possible, but somewhere else you said that there were 1,732 families recorded as beneficiaries, and now something 6,000 has been excess of that. Is it possible that if people that believe that they are not going to be beneficiaries, that it's time to discuss this process? That's the one question. The other question I have is In terms of the CRA, the people that have been connected, how long have they been connected, and what is it in business that they will still be there before they are? Obviously, I imagine it depends on the process unfolding, that the settlement before they will be there. And one last question, Chairperson. You spoke at length about the problems encountering about obtaining land. The question that comes to mind is, you did indicate that this project was initiated in 2002.
Yes.
Initially, somewhere there was about before you were the Minister of Housing. I remember very clearly the first meeting where the committee were exposed to the whole plan. And I mean, it was a wonderful plan, and we had all these consultants on board.
Mr. Sheen is present, continues.
My question, therefore, is, what I can't help wondering is, why would we be going through this process now in trying to obtain land? Because if the project started way back, I would imagine that the phases were laid out, plans would have been in place to try and obtain the necessary land. And yet, it seems to be the one big stumble block now, what, 3, 4, 5 years into the project. Thank you, sir. And then if I may just say thank you, Chairperson, to the Minister for the very lengthy and I think necessary description of how it started and how it's going through. And perhaps if there is still some time at the end of this, if the Minister could just give us an indication of the way forward. Thank you.
Ask about the time frame that is given to the temporary resident. Okay. Actually, I want to talk about the time frame given to temporary resident. I think the time frame should be something that is linking the time frame to something if you move them from the temporary one to the second place. That means it will give you the time frame that this is the time frame. And I'd like to talk about the time frame to this temporary area. Because the time frame is something that I want to find out. Is there something to say people shouldn't extend their houses or they shouldn't? Is there such a thing that exists in houses? Because there's a limited number of homes as time goes on. What should they do if you want to promote them to their community? Another question that I want to ask is, we have seen the 7 to 9 a week. I've seen it already laid out down with the infrastructure. But I just want to find out if that area, is that area a permanent one, or are you going to move people there for education for the temporary one? If you are going to move them for permanent one, are you going to build RV houses there before you move them, rather than moving them to that area before so they are heading up? The other one that I really agree with you is capacity carry, which is also a problem in my area, I know. But the thing is, housing is actually not for the infrastructure we are talking about. How is the minister going to ensure that you are not going to take money from the housing and, get a little bit of the capacity? Who is going to, how are you going to ensure that the infrastructure, yes, someone is screaming, making sure the infrastructure is there without taking the money that is meant for housing? The other one is you talk about that this entry gateway.
That's the last one, because the other member, you can come to another round and finish.
Okay, you said that the entry gateway is meant for local and mortgage and the other one is for local. I just want to find out all the mortgage. Is there a response for mortgage if people are applying? If they, and if they are good applying, what is the response of the bank?
No, we are really getting a knock on honorable member not attending the committee meeting.
No, thanks, Chair. Thanks for the minister as well. Just in relation to the case, it's a clarification. Is it the whole of the entry gateway that is impacted, or is there certain areas of the entry? Let's get clarity on that. Also, in the presentation, the minister focuses a lot, obviously, on the critical part that you would see along the highway, but I know there's other parts of the entry gateway that are progressing very well. But from my own understanding, maybe the minister just expand on that and just indicate whether the other areas of the entry gateway are progressing. Are people moving into those highways? What is the status? to the other part, the other area that for part higher than you get there. And then just my last question, Chief, is just after the budget speech, the minister made an announcement that in the budget speech thereafter that the contractors will start to build on a 24-hour basis. I was wondering if you could get an update on whether that has been all the contractors actually adhering to the instruction by the minister.
Over to you, Ms.
Thank you. Chairperson, I'd like the Honourable Woodstein to understand that when you have a problem, that doesn't take away the important significance of a particular subject. We have problems. We've had problems. But the scale and the significance of this project is so far greater than anything we've experienced in this country. So Mr. Stein is the preferred way that you describe it, not us. It is still a good, very, very good project. And we learn from all the mistakes we have, all the challenges we have, because we're perfecting. Finally, what we'll give out to the provinces will be a blueprint that has been tested through the most rigorous process possible. Is it possible that those who would not benefit, because their number now is far greater than the number that we had originally suspected, or thought we had originally worked out? We suspect that this might be the case, but we don't know. What we're wanting to do, fortunately for us, we have a company, an audit company, that audited the entirety of the people who are on the waiting list there. And of course, when you have 1,700 families as beneficiaries, and it is now, we've already moved 3,500, and you still have 6,000 somewhere there, something doesn't add up. Something doesn't add up. So we've got to make sure that we can actually keep our promise to the beneficiaries of the project. And ensure that those people who are wanting to jump the queue, which seems to be a problem in most of the areas where we go and build, we find a way of resolving that problem. Because we cannot allow people to jump the queue over and above people who have patiently waited out in Langa for many years. Most of them have been there for 20, 30 years, patiently waiting for the government to deliver housing. And we are still asking them to be patient when there is quite clearly a process where people are jumping the queue. And this is one of the things that the people of Langa have warned us against. Is that whenever there is any building, people will flood to the informal settlement because they think that they will be first on the queue. How are you assuring us that this will not happen? And stupidly then, we said, look, we've got all our plans in place. Also because we had taken on board the cooperation we received from the community itself. We've taken on board that the community would police itself because they don't want to be pushed any further back down the line. Right now, the people who are there, who are now in that corner there, which is the confrontational area we have, are now beginning to complain to us that there are even more invaders coming into that area, making their lives more difficult. So we've got to find a way in which we can deal with this because it should not be allowed. But that is a possibility that we are thinking is what is happening on the N2. You want to know how long will the people wait in TRA? That's the biggest problem that we have. When we took people from the first phase there and took them to the TRA, we promised them that they would not be there for more than a year because that is what we believe. We did not realize we would be bogged down with the kind of problems that we're bogged down with. We have a responsibility to those people as much as we have a responsibility to these people. We've got to make sure that we can balance the greater good with the good that is being provided here, which is why we've had to go to court, because we've got to find a solution, a legal solution that says we've got to provide for those people that need to be provided for, who have cooperated and very willingly moved. One of the demands that the people who are now resisting relocation have been making is we want houses for us here. The people who have left with their bags, they can go away and stay there. We want you to provide houses for us here. And we've got to find a way as government of making sure that even as we go out and bend backwards to make sure we can take on board the concerns and the problems of the community. Let me balance them with the concerns and of the other communities who stand to benefit. If the people of the TRAs were to go and march now, demanding their houses, I would understand that, because they have waited long. And the process has been very protracted, because we didn't want to take the last step, which is actually requiring that we force people to take the option, which to us is the most logical and the most humane and the most equitable for the greater good of the project. Land availability, why do we have a problem? We have a problem because, Mr. Sain, I'm so glad you asked the question. We came to a point with the new administration of the city, where the council decided that some of the land that they'd allocated to the N2 would be taken back. The land in Epping was allocated to the project. The land in Badel, the land in Guguletu, and a whole lot of other parcels that were part and parcel of this have since been taken away by the new administration in the city. So that is why we are now almost falling all over ourselves to try and get other parcels of land. When we worked out this entire area, we thought we had enough land to decant some of the densities that we have there. Way forward. Was it you who was asking about the way forward?
Of course, Mr.
Okay. You asked what would the time frame be. We had worked out it would be a year. We would like, in the final policy that we deal with relocation, to actually say that we would not want people to be dislocated from their communities for more than a year. But of course, that will depend on the conditions, that will depend on a number of other issues. But it is easier to be able to negotiate with people if you have a very set time frame. This is what we have negotiated with the people in the NC, and we are now finding that the necessary flexibility has been built into what we are doing. But quite clearly, time frames are absolutely important to work out as new community people from their normal areas. The extension of houses. You know, the big problem that we have is that we would like to give the people of phase 3, the single houses, enough space so that they're able to have the necessary extension. Because the biggest problem we've had with the RDP houses is that they've been so small, it has not been possible for the whole family to live in there. And yet the area that surrounds the house is so small that it is not possible for them to extend. So we wanted to make sure that whatever we build there will live the test of time. In 20 years' time, it will not be a disinvestment to this government. No, people are allowed to extend, but they're not allowed to build sheds in houses that have already been given to us. Because if we're going to be removing sheds, then we don't want them to build sheds. We would like them to build structures that are approved by the city council. Just 7 to 9, yes, we're building on land that would otherwise be used for formal housing. So I don't know whether it's you.
Yes.
Yes, that land that we have there is the land that we're going to use for building houses. So we're using it now for some of the TRAs, because it is land that we already own, it is land that we service, and we're hoping that if we retain people and offer them permanent accommodations, we will have the release of the land. Capacity to carry, this is the problem. We've been in negotiations with the people of the N2 gateway, who say, look, build for all of us here. None of us want to leave. We are wanting to say to them, even if with our best intention we were to do that, the carrying capacity would not be able to carry the number of people. You would have the kind of situation we are talking about. Block sewers, bursting sewers, and all of those things. And it would not live beyond 10 years. We want to make sure that whatever investment we have here will be an investment for the people themselves and for the government. No, we will make sure that the money we are putting into infrastructure and all those solid buildings does not take away money from the other houses. The reason why we have this mix where we have the mortgage housing, where we have them now, is to take advantage of the relationship we have with the bank to cross-subsidize. We're taking money from the bank to ensure that we can give a better product of a house for the BNP, get better infrastructure for the BNP. The government gives me 38,000 rand for every house. You can't get a decent house such as we are wanting to build from 38,000 rand. We're wanting to cross-subsidize, and we've discussed this with the banks, and this is the approach that we have. We're going to cross-subsidize and use them to leverage this cross-subsidization so we can get a better product. And this is the reason why it has been so important to explain to the people of entry that we do it so that we can give them a better product. And this is the only way that we can do it. Otherwise, if we go on and build with the amount of money that we have, we will be providing them with RDP houses, which are now no longer the currency that we are using. We are now using a BNG house, a better quality house, which is an asset for everybody who gets it from us. Mortgage, what response have we got from the banks? The banks think that we are fleecing them because we want money to cross-subsidize, but they are in a memorandum of understanding with ourselves because we are committed to ensuring that we can provide for this affordable housing gap, which they have agreed that they're going to lend to. What we have agreed with the bank is that we're going to cap, because the affordability bracket keeps growing and growing. Normal people now, teachers, nurses, whatever it is that we have, are no longer able to get into the housing market because it is forever receding. So we want to cap at a particular level between 180,000 and 250,000. These are the kind of houses that we are building to make them more affordable. And this is what we have tied the banks into. And so when the people of Joe Slovo march to the FNB and FNB walks away from the deal, we as a government will be much poorer for it. FNB has nothing to gain from it. We have everything to gain because we want to make sure we can harness the private sector to provide better accommodation and better housing for our people. Does the case involve the entire N2 Gateway project? No, it only involves those people in Joe Slovo who are unwilling to move, just those people. And we are using it, oh yes, those are the, Mr. Faye, those are the, if you could have copy with the mayor and say that perhaps it was a very unkind cut of Aping and Gugulethu and whatever. But those are the areas that we have, which we still have to now find alternatives. We are hoping that the case will give the parameters of what government, what is possible, what are the responsibilities and the rights of government when they have to build. We have a constitutional obligation to build. What do we do when we cannot implement that constitutional responsibility? We want the court to find on that. And then thereafter, when we have the law, if we think we have got a very strong case. When we have the law on our side, we are in a better position to actually make sure that we can talk from a position of strength to engage with the people of Joe Slovo to say it really is in the best interest of themselves. We are doing it for them, not for anybody else. What other areas are there in N2? We have a tremendous success out in Delft, in New West. But the focus has always been on Joe Slovo, either because it is bang on the highway or because it is easier to, I'm not sure. But we have tremendous success in Delft. We are building there and we are building very good houses there. We invited the portfolio committee to come and see the houses that we are building out there. And the first house that we gave out together with a member from the DA here. Some elderly lady who was in her 80s had never had a house, and it was a very touching situation. Because what we're doing also in Delft is taking 30% of the community there together with the people in the TRA. So wherever we go, the concept of integration is still part and parcel of what we're trying to do, because we must transform our community. We must integrate our community. So we're having tremendous success. We have taken on the services of a media company to try and break through, to say, hey, the N2 goes beyond Joe Slovo. It goes to other areas. But when you come out of the airport and are driving to town, you will see on your left-hand side the tremendous success that we are now beginning to see of New Land, where we have in-situ upgrading. This is where the women went to build 26 houses, and the men are now building two houses.
Okay. 24/7.
Those companies that have not complied will no longer get any contracts from government. But to be fair to them, they had indicated that they needed time to upscale their processes to be able to do that. That is a requirement from us. And we are waiting to see that they can do that. The company that had promised right from the beginning it would do that is the one that is currently feeling very threatened there on Jones Level 2. But we will make sure that this goes ahead. The people who are building the stadium can do it. There's no reason why we can't do it for government.
Okay. We are going to ask the last round of questions, okay? Do we all agree? Because
yes.
you must all eat. Yes? Followed by Mr. Stain, Honorable Member Masango, Honorable Member Sineman, in that order.
Honourable Minister, listening to your presentation, it is quite clear that obviously within those areas there are internal and external forces which want to relate them up to direct democracy. Now, what my concern is, did government ever think of involving any form of intelligence in identifying those groups? Because it is my belief that government cannot achieve success in other areas and people can achieve success in areas where people realize that they are living in some areas. Now, is there any move by government maybe to involve this technical intelligence in identifying these groups and maybe taking action to avoid the recurrence of successes?
Why he wants to
take on
the ability of finding intelligence.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was just wondering, I always have a question, just to say the other member of the group, Honorable.
Honorable Jane, it's because we're so used to doing the committee.
Honourable Minister, I purposely asked a question about the possibility of it not being beneficiaries that are responsible for this. Let me bring the question up, because you are on record as saying that if there are beneficiaries that are currently on the waiting list that you would have been removed, which led me to believe that you sort of knew that certainly with some of these people are, and that they may very well be on the waiting list as beneficiaries. So that links up to my earlier question about, you know, who's actually responsible. But just two other things. We saw the before on that one and the after on the Joe Global Phase 1.
Mm.
And obviously there's a world of difference. But is perhaps the reality for some of these people not the fact that very few of the people that actually thought they would benefit by that Phase 1 at the end of the day in fact benefit? And that they see that as what is going to happen perhaps wrongly so throughout the project. And then lastly, and it links up to my last question in the first round, you made reference a few times to this futuristic approach, quite correctly so. Can you give us an idea in terms of, and you said repeatedly, it's a learning curve and so on, is there anything that you can really look at that through experience and through what you've learned is now going to be changed? It's going to differ from what was originally intended.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Yeah, just as an extra, this was one question, but then I said, they have asked it, but not the way I wanted to ask it. The minister, you have some few months or a month ago indicated that you want to remove people who are interfering with their country. Did you so far remove some other people from the country?
Mm-hmm. Honourable Member?
I think that's something that's come out very clearly. If
before. I think it's important to raise that. I think that certainly as a portfolio committee we need to try and take this up. I think we need to ask in all sincerity the Honourable Mr. Saint, the Funders Committee, to in fact have an engagement with members of his own party in that administration, because I think it's quite serious. I mean, it's the thing now with the where originally we had enough land to carry out this project, and now we're sitting with a problem, we don't have enough land, then I find that strange. And I think as a committee we need to ask that some intervention. I think it's a shame.
I just want to say, Minister, also the positive thing of out of this SMC Gateway. One of them is what myself, Honorable Woodstein, and Dambuza experienced on Monday with the launch of Silindia Consortium. If you remember, those were the volunteers in Newrest, and now they're helping with men's work. But they've grown into the construction industry through this initiative of SMC Gateway. So that's one of the highlights that we need to take into account. One of the areas that we would like to hear coming up front, it's a pity now we have this dilemma of the land. It would be positive if, for example, people are in the TRA. It's a showcase, they remove from TRA to houses. And with the pace that we spoke about, I think it was M5, where we said they must build houses within a certain period of time. You gave them deadlines about it, 4 weeks or whatever. If that is happening, it's something that we'd like to get into. We don't have to get into it now because it's not part of your briefing. But I'm saying it would have been better for the TRA process if we know that after a certain period people are guaranteed to get into houses. I'm sure some of the dilemmas could have been avoided. But I take what Greg is talking about in terms of further engagement with the city on the issue of land. Maybe what we need to do is to visit the mayor ourselves with you. And I think it would be too much of a pressure on him taking it alone. I think if we go as a collective, it would be better. Okay?
I in fact, every time either a presentation or some sort of meeting, something comes up that does affect the city, I do take it up with the relevant people.
Okay.
And often, I unfortunately get contradictory information.
Mm.
Now, yes, I do agree that we should perhaps in one or two things change. We could go there in delegation, or alternatively, we should get the city to come before this committee and answer specifically the
specific issue. Mm. Yeah, you're right.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm very heartened to see over and over the kind of support we get from the portfolio committee, because quite clearly, oversight does not only mean beating over the head; it also means coming in and ensuring that systems are worked out in which it is possible for us to do what needs to be done. I'd be very grateful for your intervention on this matter. Perhaps you might also bring in the project manager so that we're not speaking, they're not speaking at variance with each other, and this matter will be resolved. But in the meantime, we've been able to get land from defense, from public works, and the province has given us land in Blue Downs. As I say, we're in partnership with Tech Dollars International, which has given us land in Philippines. If we could get even greater land, then it means that we are able to deal with densities that are very much what we would like to see. Because we would like to make sure that we have the necessary social amenities and schools and all of that in the areas that we are building. I want to go to the issue of intelligence problems on the M2. It would be very difficult for me to actually begin to indicate whether or not this is the direction we should take. I have been very concerned too, because the kind of people who have been assisting the residents of M2 Gateway projects are called anti-eviction campaigns. The kind of people who have been writing letters are people who are in their own right as individuals, also sending letters to fight like communist anarchy or something like that, or whatever it is. So it just goes to show that beyond just the people of this logo, there are other people who might be interested for whatever reason that they might get out of it. What I was indicating earlier is that we've got such a great deal of interest. I wish that interest was there when the people of those local houses were burning down, because the response would have been swift. We would have been able to show that we actually are concerned about the poor. There are a number of people out there who are rebels looking for a cause, and are unfortunately finding a cause in the poor, and using the poor as a cause that they've been looking for. That is an unfortunate situation. But I'm sure that we can move and not allow ourselves to be derailed by this. We have conscientiously not responded to any of the articles that have been written in the media, because that is a diversion. We have a job at hand. We have to deliver. And I'm certain that the people of Silslovo will understand. I mean, you can't sit here and see what was there before that phase one and see what is there now and not feel I want to be part of that. There's got to be something wrong. You can't see the immensity of what is happening on the M2 and not want to benefit from that. There's something wrong there. We have been on record saying that perhaps it is possible that at a particular time, I think it was at the beginning of the year, I did say at an interview, perhaps we have not communicated enough with our people. I have since myself ensured we communicated enough. So I am quite certain that we've done everything beyond reason, normal reason, to ensure that the people understand. Not only that, you know, we are there to show them the compassion we have. It is visible. We put it across. We go with the portfolio committee. We have community meetings. They know it. So I have no idea what it is that lies beyond what I can see. But I'm sure the people will understand in time that we only have one government, and finally only this government at the moment will deliver to them. They have a right. We are determined to give them their right. We just want them to cooperate with us. I thought when Mr. Stain, Honorable Stain, put up his hand on intelligence, I thought he was going to offer us some advice on, about how to do that. Beneficiaries, yes. Mr. Chay, what I said very specifically is that we are very concerned about those people who have been causing mayhem, and we threatened that we were going to remove them from the book. We didn't say the beneficiaries, because I am quite certain, even as I'm sitting here, that nobody who stands to benefit would do what they would do, especially after we've gone to all the lengths. You asked a question earlier, is it possible that it is people, later people, who have no possibility of getting houses? We've since discovered that, in fact, a number of the people who are living there will not benefit. And if I was one of those people who was not going to benefit, why would I go out of my way to make this process smoother? But it would be very difficult for me to be very definitive about this, especially when we're before the court. I think it would be unfair that I make this accusation. It's cutting and I'm responding to what you were saying, and I'd like us to leave it at that particular point. Is there anything that has been changed from the original idea? Yes, lots. You know, the original idea, as you saw in the picture, Ms. Honorable Stain, was we had medium density all across, and that would have offered us greater number of intakes. But we discovered when we were building phase one just how costly it is to build medium density, because the depth of the foundation has to be able to hold up the structure, and that is what takes up a great deal of money. Now, if each family in a subsidy is allocated 38,000 rand, that 38,000 rand would be sunk in the infrastructure. We would not be able to provide the people there with the kind of decent shelter that we would like to do. In fact, it just would not be possible. So we've had to change our plans as we discover that is what we had intended to have right at the beginning. What we have now is just the first phase there. Because it is possible, because we have rental stock. Please put it back. We have rental stock, and we are able to then have cost recovery processes built in. And ultimately, we are hoping that at a particular time, when our systems are such that we are able to offer pay to own, rent to own for those individuals there. But we couldn't afford that for the rest of the community because it is far too costly for government, which is based on subsidies. On the other side, we were extremely futuristic. The other side there, you see, is an initiation site. And we had thought maybe we might begin to talk to the people of Langa and show them just how good the development would be. And we were chased out. We left the village running. It took us, we negotiated them with them for 4 or 5 months. And they ultimately said, if you want to have your, you know, keep your life intact, please just leave. So we left. So part of that, it's no longer part of our plan. But also, on phase two, we had planned to have initially 600 bonded houses. We cut it down to 200. It is now down to 35. Because we are trying to ensure that we can accommodate. Because you see, the purpose of a challenge, if you're a reasonable person, when you're faced with a challenge, you've got to change to accommodate that challenge.
So,
and also, we're changing to show the people of Lama, especially Joseph, that we are actually the nicest people they could ever have come across. They're very nice. So if they don't take the opportunity while they have it, they will live to regret it. But quite a lot has changed in the last year. Job creation. Part of what we're wanting to do, Chairperson, is indeed job creation.
Mm.
And we have created job creation for 300 women, and the women were there to take up the possibility and the offer. We're hoping we are also doing something very interesting for women. We're making a model of the M2, and we're employing women from Delft to do those little houses on the model. You know the model that you have, don't you? We're employing the women from Delft to do those little structures and whatever. And we're hoping to ensure that we have greater intake on the SME thing, have women trained in doing curtains, because you can imagine the market they're going to have women trained in doing math and all of those things. But that is part and parcel of the unfolding program. And if we could be left to do the things that we need to do instead of running to court, I'm sure we would have a much greater success.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Minister. I'm sure members we have better insight, and we will continue engaging with the Department of Entry Gateway and yourself, Minister. And we'll also visit the town, as I said, to be continuously doing this. But members, are coming to the end of the briefing. Thank you, Minister, and thank your team.
Thank you very much.
I'm meeting right now.